This is an Euretina Independent Medical Education podcast with kind support from Novartis and Zeiss. In this podcast, we will hear a discussion between Professor Francesca Bandella from Italy and Professor Justus Garwig from Switzerland. They are discussing relevant imaging technologies for DME diagnosis and monitoring.
So, good morning or good evening, it depends where you are now. I'm Francesco Bandello, and today I'm joined by Dr. Justus Garwig. We will discuss the best practices for diagnosing and treating patients affected by diabetic macular edema. Together, we'll try to address the most relevant imaging technologies for DME diagnosis, and then current and emerging treatment options, and we'll try to have some consideration for improving patient safety and compliance. And the first question is, what are the unique distinguishing features of the DME versus age-related macular degeneration patient demographic, and how does this impact your diagnosis and treatment approach?
So there are two general differences between DME and AMD. In AMD, patients are generally old. They have a bilateral disease, though vision loss must not necessarily be on both eyes, while in DME, patients are generally younger and quite frequently have both eyes disease. The huge advantage of DME cases is that DME is not primarily a scarring disease. So even if a patient has symptoms for 6 months or more, a recovery of vision is possible, while a patient with AMD and 6 months of vision loss, recovery is rarely possible.
I agree. Maybe some other differences about the complicated disease, diabetes. And many times these patients are already followed for many other complications. They have a complicated agenda for doctors, and sometimes they need some particular attention in order to try to lose them to the follow-up. But for sure, the main advantage, as you were saying, is that you have some time for treating DME patients. This is not the case for AMD. And in fact, with the lockdown, we had many cases of visual acuity loss, complete visual acuity loss in AMD patients. And this, fortunately, was not the case for diabetic macular edema patients.
Absolutely. There's one issue to be mentioned, that patients with long-standing diabetic macular edema, they tend to respond not as fast as you would expect from a fresh edema on anti-VEGF treatment. So educating your patient with a long-standing edema that they will need time for the edema to resolve is very important to keep their treatment adherence. Because if they expect a treatment effect after the first injection and it does not arise, then the likelihood is high that they lose treatment adherence if they do not know in advance.
So the second question is, what imaging modalities do you use in your practice for diagnosing and monitoring diabetic macular edema? And do they differ? What kind of differences do you see for this kind of diseases?
What imaging modalities we use is basically multimodal, and much of it is not primarily necessary to treat the DME, but to understand the retinal or the eye disease in general. So this is wide field photography and wide field angiography. And the most important in wide field angiography, in my feeling, is not guiding laser treatment, which you might not need if you go for intravitreal injection treatment, but to give it to your patients, to educate your patients about the severity of their disease, because compliance of the patients is linked to their understanding that they have a potentially blinding disease. Therefore, the use of wide field angiography is very helpful. And with wide field angiography, we go for planning whether to go for injection treatment or for laser treatment or for a combination of both.
I agree again with your answer. For sure, it's much better to classify your diabetic macular edema patient on the basis of a multimodal imaging. And from this point of view, biomicroscopy, OCT, fluorescein angiography are all useful information. As you are saying, it's a bit different now from the past with reference to the choices for treatment and then the intravitreal approach is the most important one. And the room for laser is really reduced. I was among the one who were saying always that it's so important to evaluate by fluorescein angiography these cases, because in some case you have some angiogenetic edema, and in other cases this is not the case. And the angiogenetic edema cases were the one that you could treat with laser, some light laser treatment. But I must admit that at the moment, the number of cases that I treat with laser is really, really very low. And maybe once each 3-4 months or less. And I am starting always with the intravitreal approach for my patients.
Which is absolutely right, because if the edema is less and the hemorrhages are less, then you will need less laser energy, which means less tissue destruction. There's two things. I do not use focal laser treatment on the posterior pole as soon as there is foveal involvement in macular edema. This is one issue that we learned. And another issue that we learned is ischemic macular edema is not an argument against treatment. Even cases with severe ischemic diabetic macular edema should undergo treatment, because even these difficult to treat cases have a chance at least to stabilize their visual function.
The third question is, how do you integrate the data from a diagnostic workup to drive your treatment decision-making process? And how do you address conflicting data from different diagnostic modalities? Because it's not always everything is coherent, and sometimes you need to decide which kind of information you prefer to follow in order to do the best for your patient.
Data from a diagnostic workup to drive your treatment decision is a very difficult question. The most important in my hands is patient education, but also physician education. Go back to show with the angiographic and the OCT findings how important it is to have a blood pressure control and exclude sleep apnea problems, have at least some metabolic control to be sure that the underlying systemic disease is not driving the game, which you cannot control at a local site. Once the basic diagnostics are made, then we usually go for an if macular involvement and vision loss is in place, we go for injection treatment. If there is aggressive proliferative disease, we also go for injection treatment if there is no vitreoretinal proliferation. If there's vitreoretinal proliferation, you have to be very careful, because at latest the second injection, you could easily end up with a tractional retinal detachment, which is difficult to treat and has not that much of a good prognosis. So meaning the cases with macular involvement with visually relevant DME, they will undergo injection treatment. And only if we see that we can extend the treatment intervals to quite a long time, or have even the chance to pause treatment, then we would go for to look again for the need of laser treatment with another angiography. But treatment decision for injection treatment is clearly linked to OCT findings, which is not only edema, but also microaneurysms in the peripheral foveal zone, ischemia in the peripheral foveal zone, and heart exudates.
Yeah, I fully agree. I me too. I think that the information coming from the OCT evaluation are the most important today. And I must admit that also fluorescein angiography, which was the exam that I considered the most important for classifying the different types of edema, today is not so important for me. And I admit I'm now using mainly OCT pictures, and this is maybe the first time fluorescein angiography is useful, but for follow-up, for treating, for decision concerning treatments or not, injections or not, I think that the OCT pictures are the most important for Absolutely. For our decisions.
There's only one issue to keep in mind. This is if patients are not likely to be compliant with your injection treatment, then you have to consider to add laser treatment to the periphery to be sure you have a stable retinal situation, even if they are not coming back for the next 6 months. So this is some aspect that sometimes gets lost in real life, because we think injection treatment is clearly the way, and the patient doesn't come back until there is a disastrous disease in the periphery.
Lots of things to think about in that very interesting discussion. Thank you once again to our sponsors, Novartis and Zeiss. I hope you enjoyed this episode from Professor Francesco Bandello and Professor Justus Garwick. In the next podcast, they will discuss current and emerging treatment options for diabetic macular edema. That's it until next time. And a reminder, there's more available on this topic at eplatform.uretina.org.